Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, Gabe Yanez and I, we are joined by Pete Roberts, husband, father, founder of Origin USA, collaborates on the Jocko Fuel site. Dude, this guy does so many different things from a business perspective. I love what he's doing from American manufacturing. I love what he's talking about in regards to having his relationship with his wife, his kids. Dude, this one was just action-packed. It might be your new favorite, huh?
Dude, I feel like I'm saying that every time we have a guest on now. Every episode. But I mean, I think that it's a testament to the type of people that we're having on the podcast and just how awesome these conversations are. Like I selfishly get so much out of every time we record with someone new. This one's super exciting, man. And the story of Origin USA and then tying that to like how Pete goes about, you know, with his relationship with his wife and how he's raised his kids, how intentional he was as a 20-year-old to like come up with this plan of like these decades in life. Dude, I got so much from that. I'm still like, we just recorded, so I'm still kind of like absorbing, but no, that was great, man. That was a really good episode.
Origin, you know, creates, I have with my own eyes seen American manufacturing from cotton to actually on the, you know, the mills to creating these rash guards. And that is when I knew, this was like probably a year or two ago, I knew, I was like, man, we need to partner with Origin USA. We need to do more with them because they're not just talking about it. They're being about it. And we have our new Train Hard rash guard, which is actually in collaboration with Origin. So Origin's American made with Train Hard branding on it. The thing is badass. It's going to be on our shop. If it isn't already when this podcast release, it will be there soon. But yeah, if you guys get a chance, go check out Origin USA and definitely just sit back, you know, enjoy this episode. You know, Pete has a lot of really great information. His background is unique. And it's our goal to bring people on this show that can bring different vantage points. And I think that his is very unique. So enjoy the show. Really appreciate you guys listening. Before we get into it, if you can, it really helps. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. Share the episode with your friends, your family, if you get value in it. You know, we're really trying to put attention and focus on this podcast and really dive in with great leaders in the space. And you sharing it just supports the podcast. So appreciate all y'all. And let's dive into a great episode with Pete Roberts. So Pete, thanks for coming on the show. I want to start off by just telling a quick story. So I was out in Maine at the Origin Jiu-Jitsu camp, and you had invited me out maybe like, I don't know, 6 months before. Like, hey, dude, you should come out to the camp. And I was like, oh man, like it's like from West Coast to East Coast. It's a long way to go. I was making all kinds of excuses on why it was like a big lift to go out there. But I go out there and I meet some amazing people. I learn incredible jiu-jitsu. It is just an awesome, like, just camp, like good energy and everything's great. But I'm having lunch with a couple of guys and we're off site at the time. And I'm at like a local cafe in Maine, right? Right around your city. I don't, what is the city called that we were even in? I don't even know.
It was, where were we? It would be it's not Farmington. It's south of Farmington. It's kind of like, I can't remember. Fayette.
Yeah. And so we're just grabbing lunch at a local spot. It's me, Leif, a couple other guys. We're just grabbing lunch. And we were wearing like an Origin immersion camp shirt. And the guy could tell like we kind of stood out, right? These four or five guys at a table. We just didn't look like we were whatever.
Yeah.
The guy comes up to us. He's like, hey, man, Pete Roberts, right? He's the owner of Origin. He started that, right? And we were like, yeah. He goes, that guy has made a bigger impact on this city and our family and our friends than anybody else I know. And he just said that and he just walked out the door. And I was like, wow. And that was a really good testament of like what I think you're building through Origin US manufacturing. And I just wanted to start there, man, because it wasn't an easy journey to get to where you're at. I've heard a lot of it. I want to dive into more of it from entrepreneurship, being a husband, being a father. But that to me is a sign of a really successful person is making an impact. And you're obviously doing that. So just want to say thank you. And that's the story that I wanted to start off with.
Awesome. No, that's, I appreciate that. You didn't share that with me when we were at camp, but
I did not.
It's kind of a big burden to bear. I guess it's like what you do when nobody's watching that matters. So it's I appreciate you sharing that with me. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of going back and, you know, with Origin and with the previous company you have, I want to start off with talking about kids and sports. So I know that you have two older kids than Gabe and I have. So Gabe has like a 15-month-old son and about to, what, Gabe, your daughter's due any day now, right?
Dude, any day now. I might have to run off this podcast.
Perfect.
Perfect. But your kids are a little bit older than ours, and I always feel like you could learn from people who have kind of gone through those kind of seasons in their life. And one thing I'm curious about is I heard you talk about your football career in the way that, you know, they're fighting for the number one spot and whatnot. But one thing that really stuck out to me that you said with a podcast years ago with Jocko was you said you have an aversion to the sport of football. And because of your experience, you now have an aversion to it. You couldn't even watch it for a while after you were done playing college football. And so I'm curious now with your kids, and I know your son in particular plays lacrosse, and I'm not quite sure what sports your daughter plays, but I'm wondering what lessons you learned while playing collegiate football and other sports that you took to your kids, said they don't have the same aversion to the sports that you ended up getting.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, because there was a lot of lessons learned. It's funny, my daughter asked me last year, or she came to the conclusion somehow that I had played Division I sports. And she's like, "Dad, you played Division I?" And I was like, "Yeah, I did." And it like all kind of, you know, just kind of came to the front, because I, you know, I didn't really talk about the reason I disliked my experience in college sports. I more just took the lessons. And then when I thought about raising my kids, because I wanted them to get into athletics, because I think athletics is a metaphor for life, where it's kind of the melting pot where people come together. There's different types of folks, different personalities, and you need to come together as a team. So I think athletics is the number one most important thing for me in school, for me above math, science, English, and only second to, you know, art and being creative. So where I spent most of my time in high school. But, you know, my son got to experience firsthand kind of a little bit of that, that coaches in high school living vicariously through the kids, and kind of the pressure and a little bit of the drama that comes with that, and making sure there's an understanding that sports is sports and it's a tool for learning. So you can extract what you learn and apply it to life, because you're going to deal with adversity in sports. You're going to deal with loss, you know, whether it's a losing season, bad attitudes on the team, whether you learn a lot about culture, and you learn a lot about human nature too, and what motivates people, especially when, you know, when something's on the line, a game is on the line. So, you know, I did coach my son and daughter only when they were small, in lacrosse, and we're a big lax family. We love lacrosse in this family. If I could do it all again, I would have probably played lacrosse in college. I was great at lacrosse, but I was really good at football. I was a big kid, you know, athletic. And so I just got more folks interested in football than lacrosse. But, you know, I think for my own kids, coaching them when they were small, not taking it too serious, but allowing them to understand that if you want to be good at anything in life, it's what you do when nobody's watching, right? It's getting the ball against the wall ball. It's using your right hand and your left hand. It's using the resources you have. And I would tell them stories about growing up, and I grew up, you know, pretty, not with a lot. You know, my mom was on welfare at times, and we had an old barn out in the woods, Maine, that I used to throw the lacrosse ball at, you know, every single day of the year, rain, snow, or shine. And I would explain that to them, you know, that it's going to take more than going to a camp in the summer. It's going to take more than throwing around your friends after school. You're going to have to get off your device. And we didn't allow our kids to have these things until they were 14. It was just the way that we raised our kids. We thought it was a distraction from their youth. But I just tried to teach them lessons along the way, in that, you know, just because a coach makes a decision or yells at you or does something that you think isn't right doesn't mean they're a bad person, you know? And it doesn't mean that you need to take everything they say like it's, you know, scripture either. You know, it's just their words, and human nature and emotion come into play, and that's why people make decisions. And the most important thing you can do is learn about emotional intelligence and interpersonal communication, which are two the three things, like emotional intelligence, interpersonal communication, and resourcefulness. Those are like three things I wanted to instill in my kids, both my wife and I. So, you know, we use sports to do that. I use my experiences in high school and college athletics to do that. And of course, my experiences in business to do that.
Pete, how old are your kids?
My son is now 21 and he's a junior at Bentley University in Waltham, Massachusetts business school. My daughter's 18 and she is headed to NC State in the fall of this year. So,
Elizabeth fired up with that.
Very nice. Yeah. Have they been involved in the business at all?
So they have. They were, you know, when I started Origin in 2011, it was tricky. And in 2012, we made it a lot more tricky because we decided to build a factory in my backyard.
I heard.
And, you know, the kids, I needed their help, even though they were small, you know, I mean, so my son would have been 24, 13 years ago. I mean, they were both little, you know, and they helped, you know, like put flooring down and, you know, they would come in after school and vacuum and clean and sometimes run a sewing machine if we needed them to, on occasion, especially during COVID. They both, you know, worked, cause they had to until we got in trouble from OSHA. They called up and they, you can't have your kids in there. I said, hey, you know, we've got to make 40,000 of these things for Google or whatever. And they're like, we understand. And we're huge fans of Origin and we're not going to like do anything. We just, you're not really not supposed to. They were really, really nice about it. It was like, I'm like, okay, well, we'll take them off the sewing machines and have them do something else. But yeah, they both worked in the business throughout their youth.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I know that, so me and Jason prepping for this podcast, we were like sending each other some different shows you've been on to kind of hear the origin story. Jason knew a lot more of it than I did, but man, I was so fired up this morning. I was listening to the Andy Stump episode you were on. So
oh yeah.
One, man, I was ready to run through a brick wall when you were done. But so for people that haven't heard the origin story, I think it's worth just going back and like, if you can give us the footnotes of how you decided to, what, I mean, on paper is like a really bad business idea, right? Like,
really bad
story of the, like, $200 pair of pants that you started with when you made five pants. But if you can give us like the footnote version of the origin story.
Yeah. And I tell it a little differently every time I tell it, because it's been a number of years since I've told it. And of course the story has grown and changed as we've expanded our footprint across the US. But what it really boils down to is I saw an opportunity in jiu-jitsu. After losing pretty much everything except for my home in the recession of 2007, 2008. And kind of the thing keeping me together was jiu-jitsu. Like, it was just like, I was so passionate and so addicted to jiu-jitsu. And, you know, jiu-jitsu helped me think about the next phase in life. You know, jiu-jitsu, you're either early, you're on time, or you're late. And if you're in a bad position and it's an uncomfortable position or you're getting submitted, you need to know when to tap and restart. And so I was in this kind of, okay, it's time to tap and restart phase of my life. And I just wanted to do something in jiu-jitsu. And so I started a jiu-jitsu gi company and started, I'm a designer. So I started designing and innovating on the gi in ways I think they could work. And I was heavy, heavy into the competition scene. I competed in the world championships every year. And I won the world pro and got sent out to Abu Dhabi as a brown belt in the brown and black belt division and back in 2012. And it was just, my life was jiu-jitsu, competing in jiu-jitsu. It's like all I wanted to do, but the uniform was really archaic. It hadn't been changed in like 100 years. And so I initially started looking for manufacturing in America because I wanted to make the stuff in the US. And a lot of the things I wanted to do to the jiu-jitsu gi, I knew I had to kind of a little bit be hands-on. But as I started to dig and dig, it was like impossible to do. And I was like, man, I can't believe it.
Why was that so important to you from kind of day one? Like, was it purely like you wanted to control the kind of creative process of it? Or from day one, was it something that like you wanted it to be American made for it to be American made?
Yeah. I had spent a decade before building a media company, and everything was digital, screen based, and there wasn't anything tangible that you could touch, feel, and smell. And when I thought about building this key, I was like, I want to be involved. I want to be hands on. I'm very hands on. And so I just traveled around New England trying to find someone who could help us make this, and calling fabric mills, the last few that exist in the US, and seeing if they would weave fabric for us. And it was just so capital intensive, and there was no factories that could really stitch the heavy materials and the thicknesses, and nor were the materials here in the US. But I wanted to do it because I grew up in a manufacturing community. Like every town around me, including my town, we manufactured. Bass Shoe, was the biggest employer in Franklin County. There was Hathaway Shirt Company. You had all the paper mills, and of course all the sneaker companies, Nike, and all the big ones were made in Maine and made in New England. And so it was rich. And I was just like, yeah, we can make this. This is New England. This is where it all started. We call it Yankee ingenuity. We just got to get our hands dirty and build some calluses and figure it out. But really what it came right down to is I had no capital. And I only had kind of this dream. And so I was like, okay, I guess we're going to have to import product. And that's what we did. We, imported from Pakistan for the first year and a half. And man, I did never felt good about, like, I would pre-sell stuff. I would design something screen-based, launch it and sell it, collect the money, which I didn't realize was illegal at the time. I guess you're supposed to actually have the product to ship.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I didn't know much about business back then. And then I would make the product, and then I would get the product and ship the product. And I did that for a while. And then come to find out, our manufacturer was like just ripping off our intellectual property. And I hadn't trademarked or patented anything yet. I just was like, this is what I designed, and this is what I want to make. Don't share it with anybody. This is for us. And then I found out, like, they were definitely selling the stuff I was designing to other brands in Europe and other brands in the US. And finally, I got on the phone with that damn manufacturer. And I was like, hey, this isn't okay. You're literally taking the stuff I'm sending you, and then you're sending it to other companies, and you're building the same exact product for them. And he's like, business is business. You can't do anything about it. And I was like, got it. And that's the little, just that defining moment. That's just a little bit I needed to just drive me to cut down a bunch of trees and build a factory in the woods of Maine.
Dude, and I've been to one of the factories, not the one that's behind your, I guess, the one that you built. Yeah, the original.
Yeah.
But I went to the one where, as part of the immersion camp, you give a tour of the factory. And I really, that's what really, like, just stapled the fact that, like, Origin's the company I want to work with, because I saw firsthand, American manufacturing from the cotton to the thing that's like, weave. Yeah. Dude, and I watched a rash guard get made right in front of me. And I knew that when our new Train Hard, so we're making a Train Hard Origin rash guard that's releasing, yeah, probably when this podcast releases, it'll probably just be releasing. I knew right then, I was like, bro, we got to make a rash guard with Origin. And then I saw the way you do the leather goods, and watching these guys like hand pin stuff. I think it's really fascinating. I commend you for doing it, because it wasn't the path of least resistance. It probably was.
it was hard, it was a hard path, but I just kept reflecting on the fact that, my great yaya, Jenny, she came over from like the mountains of Sparta in early 1900s, and I'm Greek, and she worked at the Lowell spinning mills. She was like a Lowell mill girl. And her son, first generation Greek, my grandfather, my papua, he worked at the Peabody tanneries when he was like 8. And I'm just like, man, like, how did they build these mills and build this product with like no technology? There wasn't free sharing of knowledge like we have today. You couldn't go on YouTube and learn about how to sew something. You just had it was knowledge that was passed down from generation to generation. And I was like, if they could do it back then, why can't we do it now? Why is everybody saying it's dead and it's not possible? You know, and I just thought it was a bunch of propaganda, you know, and it is in a way a bunch of propaganda. The way that, you know, America has treated our manufacturing communities, call it, you know, corporate greed or corporate raiders, call it politicians making backroom deals with the global elites in Wall Street. But for whatever reason, manufacturing died, got offshored for cheap labor and cheap cost. And so it was kind of like, for me, it was just like bucking the, like proving it was either, they were either right or there was something there that they were wrong, that it was propaganda. So like even like the little factory we have, you know, in my backyard here, like that was just, we had a bunch of timbers we sought out, like the Eastern white pine timbers. They were green, 10 by 10 green, 27 foot long timbers. And we did like an old school barn raising, and it was friends and family. I didn't pay anybody. I didn't have any money at the time to pay anybody. Everybody just showed up and helped out like it used to be in old New England, you know. And that's what makes Origin special, is our culture is familial. It's like jujitsu, right? So jujitsu drove the business. And we like to say, well, we're born on the ground and we were born in jujitsu, the hardest thing, jujitsu, you know what I mean? Like it's a game of trying to kill your friend. And that's where Origin started. And it's raw and it's real. And the culture of jujitsu and the culture of family, and at the same time training with your friends, you want to take care of your friends. You don't want to hurt your friends. Like that's the culture that we drove into the company. Was like, we're just going to use jujitsu to build this company, and all the lessons of jujitsu will apply to the company, and hopefully business works with that application. That was really naive, and you know, when I look back on it, thank God I was so naive to think that it could work, and not say I haven't made a bunch of tuition payments, and it very well could have been an entrepreneurial seizure, but we got it done. I'm not exactly sure how, but we figured it out. Good people, mostly.
Well, that was the next question I was going to ask you, is what, because I mean, as an outsider looking in, relatively new to the brand, and I love what you guys are doing. It seems like everything is working now. Doesn't mean that everything's perfect, but I mean, it's something's working. What was the thing that got it from, hey, like I'm making all the mistakes in the book. This is an uphill battle. These pants cost us $200 to make. How are we going to make money here? Now, like, you know, this is a thing. Like it's, people are buying stuff. They're loving it. You know, you have some amazing personalities and characters behind the brand. Like what was kind of the tipping point there?
Well, there was a couple of defining moments. Deciding to build a factory and tell the world what we were doing and saying, you know, like, hey, join us on this journey. We don't know if we're going to win or not, but we believe with you, we will be able to win. Right. So it was like getting people on board, not as a brand or product. Like it was about like rebuilding what's been lost. And so because so many folks were part of that, the early adopters were part of that, they were also very forgiving, you know, when we screwed up. And we screwed up a lot, man. Like one of our first like pro weave geese that we wove in the factory, or wove the fabric, it was beautiful. We had it dyed black. And then we made the geese and we shipped them out, and like all the dye ran out and they were just like white, gray geese. And I just remember a story from Leon Wood Bean, LL Bean, the guy started LL Bean, like the first 200 boots he sent out all fell apart. And he said, I'm going to replace all the boots. And he like went in debt to do it. And we did the same thing. I just copied his play. I was like, all right, that was 200 geese. They all washed. We're just going to replace them. And hopefully people are patient. And so I would say number one was the way that we brought the customer into the story. That was really important. If our consumer wasn't our partner, it wouldn't have worked, because we made too many mistakes because it hadn't been done in so long. You know, we would literally be like, we don't know how to sew this. We're going to try to figure it out. Like, let us know if it rips, you know? You know, I would say the second defining moment was somebody flew up here. I think we were doing like, I don't know, a few $100,000 this year. And I'm not going to say their name, but they flew up here and they offered to buy Origin for $1 million. And I remember just being like, and I didn't have any, like, any money. And one of my favorite sayings is like, two nickels to rub together, a bucket to piss in. Like, it was just, it was 16 hours a day work, 7 days a week, try to get some jujitsu in, go to sleep. And the next day, the same thing. I missed a whole, like a whole 7 years of politics, of news, of TV shows, of bands, of pop culture. I missed 7 years of it. It was literally get up, drag my ass. I'd walk down the dirt road here to the factory, go in, work, 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 try to get jujitsu, come home, sleep. And I would do that for years and years. And that, I think that is that was probably the hardest part, but walking away from that $1 million offer, like basically give you $1 million. I was just like, okay, that is, made a decision. We're going to do this. And then having to remortgage my house, to invest in the company. That was like another big defining moment. So all those things happened in the first, so 2011 to 2017. And then in 2017, I met Jocko and he's like, Pete, like I can tell the world. And Jocko's a jiu-jitsu fanatic, right? So we're just we're both black belts. And there's like this mutual respect with folks who achieve a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I think there's just this unspoken truth that you know what you went through to get there. And he's like, I want to help. I want to be part of this. I want to help. Let's drive it together. And I was like, man, if you can tell the world, that would be a huge burden off of me. Cause I'm somebody who makes shit happen. I'm like an architect of, you know, of business and brand, I guess you could say. And Jocko was obviously known and, you know, in the world of both being an author, obviously American badass, former Navy SEAL, and of course he had Echelon Front and one of the biggest podcasts in the world. And so that was a defining moment, getting Jocko involved, and we met in Portland, Maine, and we did like a napkin and a handshake deal, and we had a steak and a handshake, and we didn't sign an agreement for 3 years. And in that 3 years, we started Jocko Fuel. We started really building the company. So just the old school, like two dudes, two men shaking hands, honoring the deal that was made without contracts and going to work. And it's a real old way of doing things. But yeah, it was awesome. And then a year later, I got a phone call from a guy and he's like, hey, and I'm like, what's happening? He's like, I got your number from so-and-so. He's like, my non-compete with Under Armour ran out.
Oh yeah.
9 days ago. I'm one of the co-founders. I've been watching what you're doing. I want to help. And his name was Kip Folks. And so those two guys, it was just myself and Dedeco, who's my business partner, also badass jiu-jitsu instructor. Dedeco invested the first $10,000 in the company. Sold all the first gis to his students. Like that's how we got things started. But then further down the road, it was Jocko and then Kip, and those two humans brought something that I didn't have. You know, Jocko brought awareness and Kip brought operational excellence in footwear and apparel that I had no idea about.
Well, I want to ask you about that because it sounds like you've been able to surround yourself with some really amazing people. Obviously those two to name a few, right?
Yeah.
But you brought up a story. This was also from the Jocko podcast years and years ago. You talked about how when you were first starting the company, you went and met with a guy named John. You didn't use the last name, but you said John. And you said that the first time you met him, you walk up to him, you sit down, and the guy basically said like, hey, look, you're nothing special. Like, there's no reason why you're going to be successful. Like, just like flat out started the conversation by saying, hey, I want to level set this. Like, you're just kind of like pumped you into the ground. Right.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to, you know, spend his time with you for the next couple hours. And I think that, first off, that story was really interesting to me because this guy was a successful businessman and he took the time out of his day for no fee, no nothing, just to support a local guy. But one of the things that I took away from that is that he recommended for you to go check out a personality trait test is what I wrote down. And I've never heard this used before. Like, obviously when I was in business school, we would talk about this, but I've never heard anybody as an entrepreneur, successful entrepreneur, actually reference the personality trait test and say that it made an impact on their business. So I'm curious, like, what did you find out about that? And did that impact the people you surrounded yourself with thereafter?
Yeah, it did heavily. So a few things that happened in that meeting. I was really struggling. Like, I didn't have a way to keep the little business open origin. We were doing like I said, a few hundred grand a year. And I had run through whatever monies we had, which wasn't a lot. And, you know, I didn't have a way. And I just thought it was capital. I need capital. And so I was like, went and connected with this guy, and he lives just down the road. And I heard he was really a successful entrepreneur. I didn't realize how successful. The dude, I think he sold his business for like $1.4 billion a couple of years ago. So hugely, hugely successful. He had like no reason to sit down with me except that he had a relationship with my father-in-law. They grew up in the same town, small town of 700 people. That's the only reason. And when I walked into his lake house, this beautiful lake house on this pristine lake, he first thing he said is, "You're not special. Your ideas aren't special. Nobody gives a shit." And I was like, "Roger that," as if it couldn't have been any lower. I'm not someone who gets like really overly emotional about anything. I like to solve problems. And I was like, "I understand. I would love if you could just, you know, share, you know, maybe what you think might be missing in my business." And he said, "You know, Pete," after he said, "You still want to continue?" I was like, "Yeah, 100%. He's like, "There's a lot of great ideas out there that could be huge, but people won't execute on, they won't take the risk on them. And then there's a lot of mediocre ideas and folks that will take the risk on their mediocre idea, and they'll crush it because they believe in the thing they're doing, and they stick to it. They have a singleness of purpose, and they drive their idea to fruition. They manifest it." And I'm a big believer in visualization. Like, I used to, in high school, my lacrosse coach would have me like walk in the middle of the main winter snow through multiple feet of snow and bare feet, and like kind of like mind over matter type of stuff. So I've always believed in the power of visualization. And if you can see it in your mind's eye, anything is possible. And so, no, I said, "Man, I understand. Like, I believe in what I'm doing." He's like, "Well, what's your problem then?" And I was like, "Well, we just don't have the capital." He's like, "Don't talk to me about capital." He's like, "There's a lot of facets of business, and capital is a tiny little sliver." He's like, "You got a home?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Cool, go mortgage it. Go get the money you need." He's like, "Stop bitching about not having capital." And he opened up to me about like how business runs and business units run and the different facets of business. And that it really takes one person to drive their idea to fruition. You know, like, you got to drive it home, but you need to surround yourself with people that isn't like being in an echo chamber. And one way to do that is, he said, first, you need to take your personality profile, your Myers-Briggs. Everybody I hire takes this personality test. He's like, "That's the first thing." And then he gave me a stack of papers, and he's like, "Don't ask me for anything. Don't ask me to connect you with anybody," because the guy knows everybody, right? I'm not here to help lift up your business. I'm here to give you information that you can then execute on. That's what I'm here for. And I only ever had maybe three or four meetings with him in a decade. Like, I rarely try to get his time. I respect his time so much. It's got to be a really important decision I'm making to go and ask him for it, his advice. And so I took my personality profile and found that I was an INFJ, an ADHD INFJ, and I tried to understand who I was myself. And I'm like, I do that, I do that, or I don't do that, or here's my weaknesses and strengths. And then I had all my team take their personality profile. And and as we started to build out the organization, you need to have different personalities, you know. And what I like to say is, you know, as a CEO, my job is as a conductor, right? Like, I don't know how to necessarily play any one instrument in the orchestra, but I know that this is a string quartet and drums don't belong. And if I hear a drum, I know I need to move it out of the business. So as a conductor, as a CEO, I know when to, you know, when to bring in the cello or the violin or the viola. Like I know when to bring the instruments in, but I can hear when one is out of tune. And my job is to keep tension on the strings so the music will play. But the team's job is to make sure that we're in tune. And so it's really in my role, I've learned that because of my personality, because I'm like ADHD, if you want to put a label on it, and that I'm an INFJ, I'm an architect, and I feel like I can see patterns or read the tea leaves, so to speak.
All right, taking a break from the podcast to talk to you about the Train Hard app. If you're listening to this episode, it means you care about training, protecting, and providing, which means that you care about your health, your fitness, and becoming the most capable human being you can, just like me and Jason. Me and Jason use the Train Hard app for our training because there are three programs and it has something regardless of the season in your life you're in. If you have the time and energy and you're trying to be the fittest, strongest human being you can, we have four: strength and conditioning 5 days a week. If life is super busy right now and you need something that's just keeping your momentum from getting to zero, 20, 30 minutes max in the gym, in and out, it has a dumbbell version. If you don't have access to a bunch of equipment, we have the EMOM program. And if you're just trying to be the most jacked dad in the room, work on your body composition, we have the Flex program, which is exactly how I train and the program that I write. So if you haven't already, check the link in the podcast show notes, download the Train Hard app, train hard, but let's get back to the show.
And so it really fit as being a CEO for a long-term strategic vision, yet not strong in organizational skills, not strong in operational skills, great in human resources. I mean, great in culture building, right? But like a lot of weaknesses. And so I had to bring people in that had those skills that could challenge some of the things I was saying. And that's where things really started to go. You know what I mean? That's where it really started to go, is when I brought in real talent into the organization. Of course, we're like 500 people, so it's not a small organization.
Yeah. Gabe, you have a question on that?
We did that test at my old job, which has now been 6 years ago. And I think it's super valuable because, you know, you need to cover your blind spots, and you need to, first of all, know what those blind spots are. Yeah. And I think it's so easy, especially as leaders, to, you know, you're in a leadership position because you have certain things figured out, and it can be very difficult to figure out the things that you don't have figured out and then bring in the right people. So it's cool to hear that that's something you guys do, and it makes sense that that's a testament to where you guys are now. I think that it's also an interesting segue into something that I know Jason really wanted to talk about, which is, how does some of this play into your relationship as a husband with your wife? Cause that's a team too, right? Like, that's maybe the most important team. And I know that from your podcast that, you know, you've been with your wife, Amanda, since you guys were 16, something mm-hmm. that I know you and Jason share, cause Jason's been with his wife. So I'll let him ask the questions, but I think it's a good segue, cause I always try and think of my marriage with Ariel as like the most important team that I'm on. And a lot of those things of like blind spots and having someone that can call you out on what you're not doing well is something that I try and bring into my marriage. So I'm curious kind of what your thoughts are there and what you've learned by being with your wife for so long and obviously going through so much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Did you want to ask something, Jason, or do you want to answer that?
Gabe took the words out of my mouth because I wrote these down. I said, I heard you say that you were drawn together at 15, 16, with like a difficult situation. I was curious what that was and how that connected you, because my wife and I have also gone through difficult situations that actually brought us closer. So I'm curious what that was. And then I want to touch base on just one thing. You said, if the glass is too full, she dumps it out. If the glass is a little empty, she fills it up. Dude, I love that. I love that, because you need someone to keep you humble, right? Yeah. If your glass is too full, but you also need someone like, hey man, you're feeling down. They rise you up. And so, dude, let's talk about it.
Yeah, sure. And I'm an open book. Like, I'm transparent. I'll share anything. I overshare at times, but I'm just one of these people. I got nothing to hide. But so my wife and I dated when we were seventh grade and then eighth grade. And then we like broke up, and you know, I met her at first at the movie Tremors back in the day. Remember that movie Tremors?
Yeah, Tremors with the thing. Yeah. Yes, I do.
Yeah, yeah. I was a kid from like the poor part of the community that went to the little local school. And she was kind of from the part of the community that had like a university and a healthcare system. So a little more upbeat. So it was like, you know, the kid on the wrong side of the tracks. You know, so I met her, we kind of connected. And when we were 15, she was dating a good friend of mine, and they got pretty serious at 15 years old. And you know, and 15 year olds are emotional, you know, creatures. And we live in a tough community. Like there's a lot of, it's like cold most of the year, it's dark most of the year. And there's a lot of depression that happens in this community. And you know, and things happen. Anyways, our friend, she was dating him at the time, he shot himself, he committed suicide. And it was really hard on the whole, you know, on our whole class, her specifically. And we had a lot of suicides through high school, multiple. And it still plagues the community today. And it's one of the reasons Origin exists, right? Like a lot of substance abuse, alcoholism, you know, a lot of depression. And part of the reason Origin exists is because communities used to be the melting pot where people came together and did hard things together and had fulfillment. And when you don't have fulfillment, you don't have something to look forward to at the end of each day. What do you have? You try to disguise it in a way. And some people, you know, we had an employee shoot himself, committed suicide a couple years ago. A young kid, 22 years old. Like it's a horrible place to be when you feel like there's nothing more in life. And I don't think people realize that about Northern New England and Maine, that we are plagued with a lot of, it's a depression. And I've said in the past on podcasts, like it's a depressed community. What I really mean is like, it can be to the point where people take their own lives. Anyways, our friend, you know, took his life. I was kind of her rock through the whole thing. You know, started out as, you know, just a friendship. But it kind of opened up a new opportunity for us to get to know one another a little bit deeper. I was a really good listener. You know, and I was always on, you know what I mean? I'm an introvert, so I didn't get distracted by much. I think she appreciated that about me. And over time, we just really, really connected. And we had, when we were younger kids, you know, seventh and eighth grade, but we got back together when we were sophomores. We just stuck, you know, we just fit together. And we knew it was a lifetime bond really early on. That we had. So yeah, I mean, she would say like, I'm her rock. You know, the saying, you know, behind every great man is a great woman. It's really, really, really true. Like it's really true. If you've got the right woman in your life to keep you humble, to lift you up when you're down, to put the water in when it's too empty, to dump a little bit out when it's too full. You know, I think that is really significant in our ability to succeed as parents and our ability to succeed in business and life.
Sal Frazella said it a little bit of a different way. When he was on the show, he said his uncle would go up to him at a young age and be like, every king needs a queen. He just kept saying that to him. Right. And then finally, like when he realized it, you know, because his wife, Raquel, they've been together for a long time too. He's like, okay, I get what my uncle was saying, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. You need that counterpart. You know, I don't know if every entrepreneur has that. I certainly needed it.
Yeah. Well, but she works in the business as well.
Yeah. She's the chief operating officer of Origin.
Dude. So how's that been? Because, you know, Ash and I have been together for a long time, but we have not really been too much in the business side. I think, you know, we have probably some similar characteristics, but I find that like maybe I'm a little bit, when it came to her being in the business, I think that like it started to cause some conflict and it just wasn't worth it for our relationship. So we just kind of, it just wasn't worth it. Right. How have you guys overcame that? Because I imagine for a lot of people listening too, like it could be the greatest thing in the world because you work with your best friend, but it could also cause a lot of turmoil that you probably, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I got a good answer for you. I like to say there's four decades of opportunity. And in our first decade of opportunity, like our early 20s, we were in business together and it was a nightmare. We had a media company and, you know, when you're young and in your 20s and you've got young kids at home, like we fought and fought and fought and it was ugly. You know, and the stresses of finances really brings out the worst of in people too. She stepped away after the recession and she's like, you know, Pete, I'm going to go do the things I want to do. And so she started working at the school. She was a librarian, you know, and she was really happy. And honestly, on her little $20,000 a year salary, that's what was supporting us. Like 2000, probably like 9, 10, 11, 12. Like we didn't make any real meaningful money. So we were really like tight, hunkered down. And when I needed her again on Origin, it was 2017 when we moved into the second factory. And I had to negotiate with her to bring her back. And we just decided that we were going to run the business as professionals and be respectful, you know, and both try to listen more than talk and understand the roles and responsibilities, and that it didn't need to be like fighting all the time. Like we had more respect for one another. We had respect for the situation we were in and dire straits, you know, during the recession when we had to like go on state aid, you know what I mean? Like it was really bad. And anything like more than that was a blessing, you know what I mean? So let's not create friction and drama in our relationship. Let's respect one another as we go into this next phase of life and business. And we just made a decision. And our arguments, like, man, we'll get in like a solid argument like once every 5 years. Like it's like years between a solid argument. And usually they're resolved pretty quickly. We both self-check and, you know, and get back on track. My kids have probably seen us argue two times, like really, really argue two times, probably maybe three times, not bicker. Like we're, you know, we've known each other since we were little kids. Like we bicker and we're fun and whatnot. But I think there is a, like, she respects me as a, in my role and as a professional, and I have to respect her as a professional. And what happens is, you find yourself treating your spouse like your spouse versus like another professional. Like I wouldn't treat my COO on Jocko Fuel like that, or my president on Jocko Fuel, or my, you know, my SVP of operations on Origin. When you approach them, you treat them as you talk to them a certain way. And so you got to do the same thing with your spouse if you're working together, which is really hard for people. It's really hard for people to overcome that relationship.
Yeah, I can't imagine. It's got to be tough. I've never been in this situation, but I know that, you know, conflict resolution is something that's a big part of a healthy relationship, and having to do that when there might be these like very family conversations or work conversations and be able to have like a very clear line in the sand, I can imagine isn't easy. But it sounds like, you know, you guys maybe don't have it all figured out, but, you know, seems like you're doing an okay job.
We found a formula. We found a winning formula for sure.
Yeah.
Took a long time.
One question I had, 'cause you mentioned, you know, in your 20s having young kids. So I'm assuming you're, you know, close to Jason's age, if I can make an assumption, like maybe in your 40s now and you have a 20-year-old. So you had kids pretty young.
Yeah.
How was that experience of, you know, having such a responsibility when, I mean, I think about when I was 20 and I was a kid, I didn't know anything. How was that raising kids that young? And what did you learn that maybe has helped you now in business and everything else you have going on?
Yeah, we got pushed into adulthood really quickly, right? Mm-hmm. And right after I graduated high school, she picked me up and we left. And we drove to college and had an apartment together, started living together. And we didn't have a whole lot growing up. And I was ambitious. Like, I wanted more out of life. And we wanted to get life started. And so we decided to have kids in college. Like, let's have kids now. Let's build a life together. And then hopefully, if things work out, we'll be able to go experience life in a really meaningful way when we're still young in our 40s. Yeah. And so I plan in decades, and that freaks a lot of people out. But I've always planned my business and my life in decades, like, of opportunity. And now I'm in my third, I'm 44. So I just turned 44 actually. You know, when we're kind of at that point where, okay, everything's kind of lined up, and I don't regret any of it. I would do it all again. You know, what happens to a lot of people is, you know, they have a lot of fun in their 20s. They start getting going in their 30s and they have kids. And I have a lot of friends that are in this situation. And then they're raising kids between, like, you know, like, whatever, 30, 35 and 50, 55. Right. And that's fine too. It's just not what we wanted to do because we didn't have a lot of experiences as kids. We wanted to make sure that our experiences as adults were meaningful, that we could reach out and touch the world. And so we designed everything around that, raising kids in a time, like, really when technology was just starting to come. You know, my kids were born in 2002 and 2005. So keeping them away from technology, keeping them away from media, keeping them away from news, keeping them away from distraction, you know, and it was just the way we wanted to do things. And it ended up working out really well. So it was all by design.
Looking at it in terms of decades, that right there is a really powerful statement, because I can't even, I mean, now that I'm hearing you say it, I'm going to try and do a better job. Right. But it's like, I have a hard time thinking about, you know, tomorrow. And when you look at it through the lens of decades, though, it really starts to put things in perspective. I mean, your background and mine are very similar. You know, Ash and I, we both came out of high school, went to the same college. We didn't have kids in college, but once we graduated from college, we got married and had kids. Our yeah. idea was always, hey, let's finish school. We're going to have kids.
Yeah.
You kind of jump started a little bit earlier, but to the same idea, man, it's like, if we could raise them, you know, and by the time we're in our 40s, because I'm 38 now, by the time we're in our mid 40s or late 40s, like, our kids are going to have their own lives and do their own things. And we could then continue to do our own thing like you guys do. I mean, I see you guys take trips together, yeah. do things, but I am curious, like, having kids that young, does it ever, you know, kind of, do you ever ask yourself, like, did you miss out on a college experience, and, or were you too young with your life experiences at the time? Like, because I think you mature a lot once you have kids, no question. But I'm wondering, like, if that ever kicked in early on, because one of the things that was hard for us early on was that none of our friends had kids, none of them. And so I didn't have anybody around me to mentor, to support me, because I didn't see anybody do it before me. So I was wondering how that would be for you.
You know, like, I'm an introvert, so I'm not a big, like, dude who likes to go party, and, you know, I'm not, like, a big drinker. Like, I like my time. I like to think. I'm creative, you know? And so I don't feel like I missed out on any college experiences, because it just wasn't my jam, you know? Like, I only ever wanted to build a meaningful business, and I wanted to be in business since I was a kid, because I always saw business as a conduit to freedom. You know, like, you hear Jocko say, discipline equals freedom. Yeah, for me, business equals freedom. That's what I always believed. Business is freedom. And I saw that because I had seen some of my cousins that live in Massachusetts build meaningful businesses, and they got to do things and have nice things. And I kind of watched from afar, and I was like, okay, this is the way I find freedom, is by building a business. And so that's all I wanted to do. That's why I dropped out of college to start my first business. And I was just like a dog with a bone on it.
Gabe, yeah.
I mean, it's so rare to have that level of intentionality so young.
For sure.
It's really cool to hear. And I'm curious what, and I know we're coming up to the end of the hour, but I'm really curious, like what you would attribute that in your upbringing. You mentioned just having those examples in family, but yeah. You know, to so clearly just be like, I want to start a business. I want to have, you know, these later decades of my life be super meaningful. So I'm going to, you know, front load the work now, start a family, do these things that I know I want to do instead of just, you know, I don't know, like, you know, figuring yourself out in your 20s and 30s, which I feel like is, you know, what a lot of people end up doing.
Yeah. So, you know, my dad wasn't around when I was growing up, you know, and like when I was 12, I basically became the man of the house. So, like he was in rehab. I would have to go to rehab on the weekends growing up, and it was just a disaster. And I was talking to my mom the other day. We went out to lunch, and I don't see her very often, but I was like, Mom, when I was 12, I became like the patriarch of the family at 12 years old. You know how quickly I had to grow up? Like, and she was on her own, and she was on, you know, welfare at times, and she was trying to get her college education. She had four kids all within like 5 years, right? So I was a third of four. And I really had to find a way as an immature boy to find a way to like become a man, and, you know, working, picking peas, you know, shoveling shit, working up at the ski mountain, you know, different odd jobs to just try and make an extra buck, you know, to buy gas or whatever it was. But I think the thing that drove me into business was, you know, I lived down this old dirt road about a mile away from like one of the most pristine lakes in Maine. And I grew up in this old farmhouse, but on the lake, everybody was successful and everybody had nice things and nice homes, and they were all in business. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just connected the dots, you know. I was like, okay, so if I want these things in life, I need to get into business. And I don't just need to get into business, I need to be like really successful in business. And so that's where I'm going to find freedom, because it's not going to come from my mom or my dad or my family, right? So how do I change this situation? And as I spoke earlier, athletics helped me understand a little bit of the way the world works and how to work with people and how to build teams and captain a team and build culture. And I was always really good with one-on-one with people. I wasn't great in school, but when it came to like one-on-one, I was always really good. I spoke my mind. I was articulate, and I wasn't afraid to speak my mind. And I think that got me to a certain place in life. And when I guess you could say failed at my first business, I just didn't let it stop me, because I never once didn't believe that I couldn't be successful. You know, like I believed it when the teacher said, when we were little kids, like, oh, you can be anything, you can do anything. Like, if you see it in your mind's eye, it's possible. And I still believe that. So yeah.
Do you think that you're, I must correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you mentioned that your son is in business school now, both of them have been involved in the business in the past. Do you think that, you know, cause they're kind of coming up at the age when you had kids, would you be surprised, or are they thinking of starting a family as young as you did? Are they like on a completely different trajectory? Are they just going to, you know, hop into the business? Have you thought about that at all?
I have thought about it. You know, my son, it's funny, I was talking to him recently, and he's dating a girl in college, and I was like, hey man, you know, like, you're dating a girl, that's awesome, you know, you're gonna grow, you're gonna meet people. He's like, Dad, I date for marriage, I don't date to date girls. And I was like, oh, woo-hoo. Shit. I was like, okay, yeah. I was like, I
wonder where he got that from.
Yeah, well, and both of them, and you know, my daughter was got a boyfriend. They're not like, they're just different kids, you know, like they and we didn't really have much until they were in their teenage years, right? So like we worked and worked and worked and worked and worked, and then kind of finally like, okay, it's starting to, you know, bear fruit, right? And then that fruit kind of compounds and seeds and compounds. And so, you know, they were they grew up when we didn't have a whole lot, and they saw the transition of not having anything to basically, you know, like doing whatever you want in life. I mean, there was a transition they were part of as teenagers. So they got a good head on their shoulders because they saw how hard we all had to work to get there.
Dude, you know, I don't think it's any secret why. I mean, I could only hope that with my kids, my son and my daughter could say exactly what you just said to me. Like, that would make me so fulfilled because Ash and I, like, she's my only serious girlfriend I've ever had, right? Because we met at 14. And I date to marry, not date to date. Oh.
Yeah. Woo. I couldn't believe he said it. I was like, dude, cool.
Oh, man. Well, Pete, I want to be respectful of your time. I really appreciate you. Look, you're denim. You're on a path. You are on the path to do a million pairs of denim is the goal, right? Yeah. A million pairs of denim?
Yeah. Yep.
And that's a year. A million pairs of denim a year.
Yeah, that's the goal. Is a million pairs of jeans a year, and we're trying to get there. We're well on our way. So right now I'd say we are the biggest denim manufacturer. I know we are the biggest denim manufacturer in America. We probably own most of the market share, but the market share really is got to come from those big brands who are making stuff overseas. And not until we start eating their market share do we get to where we need to be to course correct this thing.
Well, I got to tell you, if you're listening to this show and you haven't checked out Origin USA, go check out their denim. You can check out, they have a variety of different pants. They have your new Versa pants. Am I pronouncing that right? Those things are badass.
Yeah, those are cool. Versa.
They're like fancy pants. Like I could wear them out, like whatever, to dinner or whatever. And then obviously the boots, the belts, and the gis. I got gis sitting right here, and the rash guards. So stay tuned and make sure you guys are supporting Origin, because I love the mission that you started. And I think you're just getting started, to be honest. Even though you've had all this success, like there's going to be more people that are catch on. And especially when you go watch the videos you guys have produced where you talk about American manufacturing, how it's all offshore now. I think a lot of people want to bring it back, and you're leading the charge there.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate you guys having me on. It was a great conversation, and appreciate the shout out on what we're doing at Origin. And you're right, we're just getting started. So keep your eyes peeled.
Pete, I really appreciate it, man. On that podcast you were on with Andy Stumpf, you know, you guys were talking about manufacturing in China and the US, and he asked you, are you hopeful we can win? And you said, I know we can win. That was the point where I was like ready to run through a brick wall. So I just wanted to cap us off with that. I'm excited for what you're doing, man. Hope people check out Origin, and yeah, man, I know we can win. I love it.
Awesome. Thanks, fellas. Appreciate it.